what generally happens is you think of a solution and everyone just thinks of this big bang launch that you do one day, holding your shiny new thing out to the world and announcing it on all channels. But realistically, you're probably better off, unless you're Apple launching the next iPhone, doing like some sort of progressive, you know, rollouts in most cases, right? One, it helps you calibrate your rollout by learning from these earlier things. And then two, it actually helps, you know, your customers get more familiar with it over time as well. So I think, yeah, like I'm all for iterative rollouts rather than a big bang launch.
Welcome to Startup Jobs, a podcast where we explore all the different jobs inside a tech startup. What exactly are they? And what have we learned from scaling jobs from the inside?
While a lot of other startup content focuses on the founder, the investor, or specific area like marketing, this show is about your personal and career growth journey in whatever startup job is best for you.
Yeah, exactly, Maddie. This show is about you. We want you to be the very best that you can be.
Hey, hey, Mike, welcome back.
Welcome back. Do you know, I said, Maddie, let's still have a potty recording today. I would love a bit of a dopamine hit. Nothing like jumping on the mic and talking about some of my favorite topics. What have we got today?
Today we have, a very timely topic to be discussing at the moment. It's the start of a quarter for us at Zipline, start of Q2. And so we're deep in company quarterly planning at the moment. We're sort of doing the final messy process of setting our OKRs and creating plans for the key results that we're going to output. So, and I guess we're taking a slightly different approach this time around, in that rather than our sort of leadership team being given their key results, we're in the driving seat of creating that plan, like setting the KR and also setting the plan. So, you know, kind of like with that guidance of those who set the plan own the plan. So I wanted to talk about that as a topic today. And we do have quite a guru in our team who we've invited along. So, very keen to unpack this topic.
Yeah, great. The one and only Tanmay, our Chief Product Officer, Woo-hoo! Who without a doubt is absolutely a guru to really set you up here, Tanmay, in this chat, just in terms of, you know, breaking down, creating plans, particularly when they're complex and there's multiple people that need to be involved and there's sort of like various dependencies. So, yes, to kind of set the scene, we use an OKR framework, objectives, key results. Other companies may either use other things. And then, you may say, hey, we're trying to grow sales by 10% or increase product usage by blah because, you know, we want, you know, this new product to go well. And so that the company may have some overall objectives. And then, you know, when you're part of that team, you sort of put your hand up and say, do you know what, I can help, you know, I can do this, you know, thing. And then you then take on that key result. And so as part of this process, you know, what we've seen is someone says, hey, you know, no worries, I'm going to figure out how we move from 5 spinning widgets to 8 spinning widgets this quarter. And then we find out halfway through they start building the plan, or near the end they start building the plan, or they get tripped up. And so we've sort of said, do you know what, let's like draft up all the plans to begin with. And then we've realized different people have different levels of views on how, the fidelity, how good this plan should look. And people have different levels of maturity in sort of breaking down problems and creating plans. And then, you know, we've seen other situations where people are really good at creating a killer plan, but struggle to push through to completion, either, you know, because there's key things that they're, didn't factor in the risks or the dependencies. And then they get, you know, halfway through or, a few weeks before the end of the quarter and they're like, oh crap, you know, I'm not going to be able to get it done because, you know, blah. And so with that, Tanmay, I asked you to send out an internal email, to kind of help the team build this plan. So, maybe as we intro you, it'd be good to get kind of your perspective on this and then, maybe just break down, you know, that the core pieces of that email that you sent out, and then we can kind of, you know, riff on that in a conversation here.
Thanks, Mike and Maddie. Good to see you both. So at the highest level, I guess where I've seen the most rip-ups here are sort of usually in these two components. Like the first one, when it comes to setting a plan, is actually figuring out like what is the problem and the solution, and designing the right solution for it, which is the first part. And then the second part then is, once you do have a solution, is actually the project planning and getting that solution delivered and getting its impact. Because, you know, if you can't do that, then it's just a hypothetical solution that's there.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are the kind of the two big components. And if either of them is missing, then, you know, it's usually where the plan fails at the end of the day.
Great. So maybe let's run, what's a good hypothetical here?
Yeah.
Increasing product satisfaction by a certain percentage, and someone puts their hand up and says, sure, like I'll help get that new product user site up 15%. Is that a good example to kind of guide us through this process?
Yeah, maybe let's use that as an example. So it could be that, you know, where your target is, user satisfaction is kind of under that for a new product you've launched, and you're trying to get it up by 10% to sort of hit your target, which could be, you know, any KPI underneath that is measuring it. But yeah, that could be the first thing. So let's use that example and then step through it.
Right.
The first part is really about coming up with that solution. And to do that, you know, there's many frameworks in here, but ultimately what matters is, like, how do you try and find the right problem to solve and then figure out the best solution that you can begin with in order to solve that problem, right? And designing that fit there. So if we start on that, at the highest level, you need to make sure that you're first optimizing for the right thing. And in this case, we'd love to introduce a five-step process that is our go-to. Mike, do you want to quickly touch on this five-step process?
Yeah, this comes from the one and only Bible principles. And, you know, the five-step process, you know, can actually be both used, you know, personally and professionally. And it really starts with one, sort of what's clear goals, to figure out what are the biggest problems getting in the way of those goals. And then three, really spending some time on those problems to get to the root causes of those problems. And then you then want to design a plan that effectively, you know, pierces the heart of the biggest root cause problems. And then step five is you got to figure out what's going to be required to push through to get the results. So this could either be an area that you're not strong in, or the dependencies, or, you know, risks. So yeah, that's the five-step process.
Yeah, great. So what I'll do is I'll try and take you through this process for this, like, hypothetical goal that we have of improving user satisfaction on your product by a few percent in the quarter. And so the first step in this is really about sort of clarifying the goals, right? To make sure that these goals are sort of smart, you know what exactly you're doing there, and yeah, pretty much distill the essence of why that exists, right? So once you do that, that helps you try and come up with you know, the most important things to focus on. That's why it's the first step. Now, this is hard, but what we'd love to do is start by picturing yourself in, say, 90 days time, if it's a quarterly goal, and say, like, where would you like to be at the end of that? So in this case, it was clear, like, we need to improve end user satisfaction by, let's say, 10%. So yeah, that's fairly clear. But you might want to still understand this a little bit more specifically. Are we talking about, like, you know, this part of the website? Are we talking about the whole experience? Are we talking about this user type, right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So distilling it to that would make sure that your goals are not vague, they're absolutely clear. And that's what's called a SMART goal, which is, you know, specific.
So yeah, to maybe just, like, double click on that, an example would be, hey, this new product that we have, or this new product module, it's, like, really strategic to the company. You know, you're as part of that team. You know, we're feeling like it's not quite hitting the mark. Maybe the sales team are sort of giving some feedback. And then you kind of have this generic goal of, like, improve the product satisfaction, you know, by 10%. But you may want to actually go under the hood and go, well, actually, what might move the needle the most? Maybe there's these 20 customers that represent 80% of our revenue. So maybe we can be a little bit more aggressive and say, how do we move the needle, like, by 20% user satisfaction within that customer cohort, as an example, as opposed to this generic hard 10% across the entire customer base. So that's what you mean there. Like, you want to make sure that goal really is that the right goal? Because, I mean, sure, like improve this product by 10% and you can tell the whole company, yeah, we moved the needle a bit and you could have done a few things on the edges. But the bigger picture goal is, you know, we want to make this our rockstar new product hypothetically. And so you actually may want to use this time to sharpen that goal even more to get the greatest impact. Is that the right sort of summary there?
Yeah, absolutely. And that will help you then set yourself on the right path before you even start, right? Might even simplify the goal for you. So yeah, that's the first step. So let's just say we've specified it a bit more here. So we've said improve the end user satisfaction for enterprise customers or blah blah blah, like yep. by 10%. And that's where we can then get into a more sharper step two, which is understanding what are the biggest problems in the way of hitting those goals. Because if in the first step we'd kept it pretty vague, then we would not be able to kind of distill the exact problems, or there might be too many problems, right, that you care about. So yeah, I think this step is all about what are the, let's just say, three biggest blockers that are keeping this thing from going green or, or actually being achieved today. Like, what's in the way? Like, you know, why isn't this red already? Why isn't this green already? And so that's the step two. And the thing where I've seen a lot of trip ups on this step is, usually folks are afraid to start before they have a fully detailed analysis of all the things that are in the way. But where I've seen it succeed is where you can blend both your intuition or gut instinct as well as like some data and insights, which you might have in order to sort of find these problems and then just prioritize them hard to constrain it to the absolute biggest bunches, you know, the biggest problems that you can sort of get out of the way, which will lead to a high impact. Yeah.
I mean, that's such a great point, right? Because let's just say hypothetically, you go, do you know what? Let's improve the product set by 20%, you know, in this enterprise cohort, these top 20 customers. If you need to get to that output in 90 days time, you're going to need to implement something realistically a month before the end of the quarter, right? So you need to have implemented something in 60 days time, and you won't even potentially allow for some iteration, because how on earth are you going to be confident that you're going to get it right on the first shot? Like, we know that things, you often get it right on the fifth or the seventh iteration, right? So you're going to need iteration time. So you probably need to be implementing something in 30 days time, you know, in which case you're going to need to kind of come up pretty quickly with a hypothesis of what the potential thing is, you know, in the first 30 days, in which case you don't have 30 days to like navel gaze and come up with the perfect data and like weigh it all up. You're going to have to pretty quickly get a good enough back a napkin view of what's the biggest things in the way and what your initiative can be, because you really want to be getting into executing the initiative before so that you can get some market feedback to be able to iterate on it to then be able to get the results at the end of the 90 days. Yeah,
100%. So, and another way of sort of constraining yourself here, again, just like we did in the previous step, we focused on, say, just like a handful of customers that are going to have the biggest impact overall.
Yeah.
In this case, you could constrain again on, let's just say, you know, if mobile users are your biggest cohort, then maybe you just focus on improving the user experience for, you know, mobile users, because that's actually 80% of your use case, right? So that'll give you the biggest bang for buck. So yeah, again, keep looking for the 80-20 here rather than focusing on the edge cases right at the start.
Yeah, great.
Great. So once you've done that, once you've identified the biggest problems, you've stack ranked them, then it's really about, you know, before you start designing your solution, is really about making sure that these are actually the root causes and they're not just the high level problems. So have you heard of the five whys, Michael?
I have. Maddie, what's the five whys?
Good delegation there.
My understanding of the five whys is just to continuously ask why, like, here's a root, here's a problem. Why is that a problem? Why is that? Like, just continuously ask yourself. The more times you ask and deep dive into that, sort of the more likely you are to pull out what the root cause really is. Like, what's really driving this?
Absolutely. Very good. Great answer.
There's are you familiar with the originator of Five Whys and the famous story?
No, I'm actually not. What's the story?
I'm almost certain the originator is I think Toyota. It came out of like the lean the lean stuff right. And the story is there was a factory that stopped working. There was a machine in the factory that stopped working, and then rather than sort of like, oh, you know, like it's, you know, the power to the thing or whatever it may be, like they would go five whys deeper, and then that then gets to a root cause. You know, for example, why was there no power? Well, there was no power because this like circuit thing. Okay, well, why did that circuit thing not get done? Oh, because there was no regular maintenance on that circuit thing. Or why was there no regular maintenance on that thing? Oh, because that team over there outsources it to that and we haven't updated the contract. Oh, why wasn't that done? You know, and it's like, then you get back to the like root cause, and the root cause was we're not on top of our, you know, regular maintenance, like contractor setups, you know, rather than just fix the circuit board, plug it back in, and then, you know, get back to work, which is how, you know, most scenarios, and then you end up solving fairly repetitive versions of similar problems over and over again. As opposed to the five whys gets to the root.
Yeah, excellent. So that is that's important, because if we don't get to the root causes, we might sort of fix some surface level issues, and either they'll continue to become issues in the future, even though you might patch it right now as a band-aid fix. But if you address the root cause, very often you also find it encompasses a whole lot of problems that you had collected previously with just like one, you know, which all lead to the same sort of root cause, right? So by solving that, you can actually address a lot of the problems itself, right? In the previous example, if a whole lot of issues were like around, you know, being able to use a certain feature on the product or blah, 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 and, you know, a lot of the users were actually all on mobile, but we hadn't optimized that part of it and we were just designing for a desktop world, then the root cause being the lack of mobile support could actually fix a whole bunch of problems that you might have identified in the past, right? So which would help then increase the end user experience by that 10% or probably more. So that's the thinking behind the step three. Good.
Do you reckon I can jump in there, Tame, on that step three, just as a, like, would be keen to sort of elaborate more on the risks of like if that is done wrong. I find this step the hardest in terms of like doing the why, and I think that, like, I assume that this is where, like, as you've mentioned just there, if you get it wrong, you're fixing surface level problems that are probably going to keep coming up quarter to quarter. I guess, like, often I've gotten trapped at like two whys or three whys and I can't keep going to like really get to what that core, like what the root cause really is. So I guess my question is kind of like, what's the risk of going too shallow on your whys, and how do we actually how to catch yourself if you're worried that you're going to do that? Because I think we know that the risk is that you're going to solve kind of a problem that doesn't make a, you know, doesn't move the needle much. What's the best way to catch yourself and check if you've really gotten to the root cause?
So I think trying to actually write that cascade has been helpful in the past for me. And actually, like, not just like for the sake of it, but actually using the first line, like, you know, as Mike mentioned, why is this the case? And then you write the answer.
Yeah.
And then you actually ask yourself, like, again, in your mind voice, like, why is that then the problem? And I think that has been pretty helpful in coming up with it. I don't know if you've seen any other instances, Mike, around.
Yeah, like, my initial reaction to this is like, humans get really excited about ideas, not excited about problems, and not excited about going deep on the problem, right? And so what like, let's use a Toyota 5Y example. So it's like, okay, you know, we've got a problem where, I don't know, a bunch of cars aren't regularly starting. Okay, why? Because, you know, the battery's dead. Okay, cool. And customers are getting really pissed off about that. Straight away, you can come up with all these like really cool ideas, right? Which is like, oh, let's maybe like have a battery mobile switch out service, you know, like let's increase the amperage of our battery and, you know, wrap it in like gold, you know, foil and call it, you know, the Toyota like mega battery, you know, like or whatever it may be, right? Like we quickly jump to these exciting, shiny ideas and we get, we kind of fall in love with them, frankly. And then we just want to start executing that. And we sort of have this like ideas shiny syndrome, where in that scenario, you would sort of write the problem statement. You go, okay, why won't the car start? Because the battery's dead. Why is the battery dead? Because the alternator's not charging it. Well, why is the alternator not charging it? Well, because the alternator belt's broken. Okay, why did that break? Well, because we didn't do maintenance on the thing. Okay, why not? Because we don't tell customers to do maintenance on the blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that just, it requires so much more cognitive work that's frankly unsexy than, oh, the battery's dead. Let's just come up with an amazing battery, like shiny swap out program, which sounds really good to everyone. And everyone's like, oh, that's a fucking great idea. You know, we've got a new gold shiny, you know, battery replacement service. Fuck yeah. Like, let's do that. That's amazing. And so, yeah, just, I think the punchline is, I think it's against human nature to spend time writing the problem statement and going five steps deep. We jump straight to solutions often sometimes before we've even defined the problem. Yeah.
So the tactic is almost like pulling yourself out of solution mode every, like acknowledging every time you start having a shiny idea and pulling yourself back to like keep saying why, stay with the problem.
Exactly. And writing is often a really good one, right? Like, you know, what we started doing internally is like, define the problem statement for me. Like, give me, you know, a problem statement, and why does that problem statement matter? And then just that alone forces you to go, oh, okay, like, yeah, why? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. I reckon we're ready for step four then.
Great. So once you've narrowed down your sort of top three problems, or, you know, might even distill further down here, then you're kind of ready to think about the solution side. Now, this is where I suppose, the biggest trip ups I've seen here is either getting too attached to one solution and or only coming up with like one solution and then running with it. But effectively, what happens is like there's never just one solution, right? There's always solutions that are, you know, like a sticky tape to fix something which is low effort but might have some impact. There's some that are like, you know, a lot more intensive to sort of put together, right? So you could, even in the end user satisfaction one, like you could kind of, like just constrain to take the screens that are the most commonly used and make sure that they're performing really well on mobile rather than trying to overhaul your entire experience, right?
Yeah, there you go. That's so good.
Or, that's the kind of challenge. So what I recommend here is like actually listing down, think about like multiple solutions, right? I'd say come up with three that are different efforts, right? So come up with one that is really, really lean, like super easy to implement, might not have all the impact, but, you know, come up with those and then try and weigh them up. Like sometimes what you'd be surprised about is that actually, again, 80-20 here, the solution that is simpler actually gets you most of the way there potentially, right? Because that'll do the job.
And I think there's some sort of bias here. It'd be interesting to get your perspective, Maddie. And like everyone's got different personality types, you know, on sort of perfectionism spectrum and, you know, all the rest of it. The thing that I see people get tripped up most here is just like freaking overcooking it, right? Like, they get attached to the first shiny idea. Like, even if they get to the root cause, which is, okay, there's no good, you know, maintenance schedule for, you know, the alternator belt, you know, in that example. And then they come up with some amazing like national, alternator scheduling thing, like update everything, tell all the dealers, like, you know, have a roadshow, run a webinar. Like, and it's just like, it is so like, it becomes this like bigger than Ben Hur thing. And then they get so overwhelmed with that thing. They haven't actually gotten started. And then you're halfway through the quarter, three quarters of the way through the quarter. And it's like, how on earth are you going to make this thing 10-15% better when you haven't actually even implemented anything yet? And then people are like just got all this like big plan going on, or maybe they start chipping away at small parts of the plan and just haven't made any dent at all. Like where you're far better off just going, okay, what's the biggest, there may be this big, you know, thing that makes sense, but what's the first thing that you could do? And to your point, Tanmay, like rather than overhaul the whole app to be mobile friendly, you know, or, you know, that there is maybe just two key moments in the app that really, really matter, like boom, jump onto that next week, you know, overhaul those handful of screens, and that alone, yeah, you'll learn from that and you'll at least start moving the needle on it, and that can still exist in the overall plan. So I think that's probably one thing that stands out for me, is this sort of like aversion from shipping extremely lean quickly and wanting to kind of build these big, you know, overcooked plans.
And I think one more thing I've found really helpful here is if you, you know, by this stage you've thought about, hey, my goal is this. The biggest problem in the way of those goals are these three, which are the root causes. And then you should be able to draw a line between, if I do this thing, which is, you know, your solution or your, you know, the start of your plan, that would be the best thing I could do to solve this problem, which would make a good enough dent in this goal. Like that, those three have to line up pretty damn well for you to be able to do anything there, right? Because if you don't zoom back out to that, what happens is you forget about the overall goal by the time you're at the step. Yep. And then you're like kind of just brainstorming, you know, ideas rather than actually picking the right idea out of the mix that'll have the most impact.
And to use that weird Toyota alternator example, you may get so excited that as part of your mega plan, you know, you're updating something on the website around it, and then you go down a rabbit hole, and then actually you realize, and then you've made some landing page and website. It's like, well, okay, is that thing that you just spent a week on, is that like, can you now draw a straight line to it putting any kind of dent on, as opposed to who are the biggest dealers? Okay, these are our figures, five biggest dealers. Just pick up the goddamn phone, you know, call each one, tell them to add, you know, alternator maintenance, you know, in, you know, the thing, and start doing it now. And you're going to update the website and the thing, you know, in the coming weeks, to kind of just like, you know, butcher this example. But that's kind of an unsexy thing, right? Like, it's an unsexy thing usually, that very first lean step. Do you find that, is that the biggest gap that's in the way, Tanmay? Like, I'd be curious as to, you know, kind of what you've seen here as to what stops people just doing that, like, ultra lean, you know, first punch to get some momentum going there.
Yeah, so I think if at this stage the high level solution is figured out, then there are some more moves that, you know, I'd recommend downstream, which is like kind of more of a prioritization move and like a planning move, which will help you make sure that you don't trip up on this, right? Because you're right. What generally happens is you think of a solution and everyone just thinks of this big bang launch that you do one day, holding your shiny new thing out to the world and announcing it on all channels. But realistically, you're probably better off, unless you're Apple launching the next iPhone, doing like some sort of progressive, you know, rollouts in most cases, right? And actually what that does is it helps in two ways. Like one, it helps you calibrate your rollout by learning from these earlier things, and then two, it actually helps, you know, your customers kind of get more familiar with it over time as well. So I think, yeah, like I'm all for iterative rollouts rather than a big bang launch, to build more confidence in the solution, as well as bring it to market more progressively rather than a big bang fail or success.
Great. Where are we in the process? Maybe summarize the steps we've done so far and where to next.
So we've clarified the goals that we're shooting for in step one. We have then thought about what are the biggest problems in the way of those goals. In step two, we've gone five whys deep and figured out some of the root causes, which gives us that final list of problems we're going to target. And we're pretty confident that these three problems, say, for example, will help us hit our goals. So if goal is 10%, problem one might contribute 5% to it, problem two can contribute another sort of 3-4% to it, and problem three can contribute another 3-4%. Why I've shot over the 10% is, even if one of those happens to be wrong, you will hit your goal at 10%, right? So that's step sort of three. That's all the problem steps. And then step four is where we start to brainstorm the highest impact solutions to those, and think about like that whole effort impact trade-off, right? Like, what are the some easier things we could do that'll have the biggest impact? And from there, we should be able to pick what are the 1, 2, 3 things we will do this quarter in order to solve that problem. Now, if just one thing is enough to get you the full 10% at a pretty high confidence, great. Like, that would be the solution you pick, right? But if it's ideally, what I like to do is spread that risk a little bit by having one or two or three solutions, perhaps, that will together make up a bigger number, so that even if one or two of them fail, you still don't end up with a 0% result, right? You still have some uplift rather than no uplift at the end of the quarter. So that's the steps so far. The next step is really about doing whatever is necessary to push through to results. And in this case, I guess this is where sort of the the first part, which is about solution design, and the second part, which is project planning, kind of intersect, right? So you got to think about in this step, I guess the way I framed it to the team was, especially when you're, when you've got multiple folks that need to be coordinated to sort of get this result, is think about like, what are the dependencies or risks that you see in this plan becoming a, like a reality, right? Like, you know, does it require some help from, I don't know, like your technical team? Does it require some help from, you know, any customer success or account management teams, and actually finding some customers that you can test it with before you roll it out to all other customers, right? Like, what needs to happen for this plan to become a reality? And obviously you've started to think about the solution in the previous step, so you have some idea of what it's going to be. But yeah, this will help you make sure that the orchestration's done right, so that you don't end up in coming up with a plan that wouldn't work.
Great. So that, I think we've now completed part one, right? Had the clear goal, biggest problems in the way, accurately diagnosed to the root cause. We've got the sketched out high level plan. We've figured out the biggest dependencies or risks in the way. Now it's day one of getting shit done, which is this project planning. And I'm always so impressed internally how Tanmay does this, like just so much better than I do, because I'm actually pretty good at all the top bit. And then I get pretty excited, and then I often just kind of pull things in as I go, and I don't kind of like pre-plan it well, and then sort of run a good rhythm around like everyone else ahead of time. And so sort of my method of chaos and putting it on my back, you know, can be effective as an individual contributor, but can be a bit chaotic if it's not, you know, if I have dependencies on other people. So I think this is where I've been really impressed with how you do this sort of project planning, project execution. So we've now got this great killer plan, Tanmay. Take us through, and we can kind of go deep on a separate episode. So maybe like, let's fly over, you know, what are some of the key themes here and the key steps to bringing this project and this execution of this plan to life.
Yeah. So if the first part was all about figuring out sort of what is the just right solution to the most important problems in the way of your goals, and then like finalizing that solution, this part is really all about coming up with a lean plan to bring that solution to life, right? You're not at the moment thinking about all the other stuff. You're just focusing on that solution, and your only job is to make sure that when we deliver that solution, you can expect to hit those goals, right? So what is the best way in which you can bring that out? So yeah, in this part, it's all about sort of three things. One, like you got to probably think about like your own budget over the next 12 weeks. And this doesn't have to be money, but it can be just like your own time. How much time do you have to actually focus on this thing, right? Out of all the other things that you have, which will then tell you how many buckets of work can you actually realistically fit in to be able to deliver this, and how lean does that solution need to be? So that's the first step, thinking about your budget. The second step is really about breaking that solution into some timely actions or milestones that will deliver the impact that you're looking for. And then step three is just doing a final zoom out to cut any unnecessary scope that might have crept in, which always does as you plan, right? So think about the budget, break your solution down, and zoom out to cut some unnecessary scope are the three steps under project planning that I usually recommend.
That's great. And where do you see common trip ups here?
I think in this one, what I've generally seen is like we're all, you know, when we plan for almost too much. That's why, you know, we started with sort of this budget argument, because a quarter is really only 12 weeks. There's not a lot of time by the time you've sort of, you know, got things underway. And, you know, as you said earlier, if you need to make sure that you are also getting that impact, you need to roll it out to some enterprise customers as an example. So that takes like 3-4 weeks, right? Right. Sort of line it up. So then you only have like a handful of weeks. So that's trip up number one, probably not considering the budget. And then trip up number two is not breaking down the solution enough, or sort of putting it into too many steps that are sprawling and hard to control. That's sort of trip up number two. And then trip up number three is, yeah, like there's not actually tweaking the plan as time goes on. So, you know, it's not a one and done thing. As things happen, you learn things, like there'll be trip ups there. So how do you tweak it as time goes on to make sure that you can keep scope under control to still get a good chunk of that impact, even if you don't get all the impact.
Yeah, great. Anything that you've noticed here, Maddie, both in seeing 10 main action or things where you've you've come up with a good plan and then you kind of go into execution mode, and then just the, this project planning and execution piece?
Yeah, I think the opportunity to zoom out and cut the unnecessary scope is like a really good point that I've definitely tripped up on before, especially when you're like midway through a quarter.
Yeah.
The plan, like I guess, because so much time is dedicated to the plan at the start of the quarter potentially, right? And then you just go into execution mode. I think it's like so important to remember that execution mode also has plan check-ins involved.
Yeah.
And that there are times when you can sort of like deviate from the original plan to still hit the outcome. Like I've often been deep in executing a plan and it's potentially blown out in scope and I'm now at risk of hitting the original outcome. And I've probably like become more trained into then like stepping back, zooming out to what the original outcome was, saying, cool, well, like we're not going to finish the original plan, but we've got 3 weeks. How can we still hit the outcome? And so like that's definitely something I've learned in like our leadership team meetings and sort of checking in on each other's progress, because that's helped me be able to like sort of like unmarry myself from the concept of like I'm going to execute this perfect plan and actually let's just go back to sort of the leanest version of the must do actions to still hit the outcome.
Got
a very recent example from last quarter where we did that, so like that was a great learning of just like always checking in on the plan and being willing to change the scope, especially if it's still going to get you the overall outcome. I think sometimes you get so deep into a plan and executing that you forget what the original like one-liner goal was.
Yeah, exactly. And you get married to it, right? You kind of get a bit wedded and get a little bit religious about it.
Yep.
and things that you're kind of looking forward to, like in potentially that plan that you're enjoying doing. And I think this is the skill, you know, as you become more senior and you become more effective, because like this is where being efficient versus being effective really matters, right? Being efficient means, can I get through my 12 to-do lists efficiently and quickly? Effective is, did I get the two most important things done at the right level? And it's fine if I didn't get all those other things done. And so I think we've often been trained when in plans, like a good plan is like you're ticking off all the boxes, as opposed to you have a bunch of the boxes unticked. A bunch of the boxes unticked is totally fine in terms of being effective, right? And so I think this is the magic of like becoming more senior and becoming more effective is this zooming in, zooming out like all the time. And so like quite often what happens is, you know, when I catch up with someone and I'm like, cool, like how are you going against this thing? Like what you're doing? Like actually all I have, I don't even have any special superpowers or, you know, it's not like I'm smarter than them or anything. It's just all I've done is I've been able to zoom out because I'm coming in more externally and I can kind of see the bigger picture. I'm like, well, wait a minute, like you're kind of doing all this stuff, but like we're trying to get this thing done. And they're like, oh my God, like, you know, it sort of hits them. But I think that's a very easy skill to train yourself. And I think, you know, when you're doing your check-ins, you know, each week at your progress report, you just simply zoom out and go, and this is where I think Mosco is really good, right? Like what must I do? What should I do? What could I do? You know, what won't I do by eyeballing the plan? That's still going to move the needle on this, 20%. And like, I also find sometimes injecting a bit of a scary monster, like which is like, there's now 31 days to go, and I told everyone I'm going to make this 20% better. Like, what must I do right now? Like what is critical, like relative to everything else, and that, but also just helps you. And then I know sometimes, Tama, you even just about, if you just do one thing, like if you were only just going like to do one thing, like what would you do? And like, so ironically, often when you have the plan, it often becomes doing less and less and less. And the magic from that is the zooming in, zooming out.
Yep. I think all plans start as a bit of a wish list, but it's our job to kind of keep checking in to, by zooming out, to just constrain it to the absolute musts that need to happen, right? And then, by the end of it, it's fine if you end up with like, you know, the original plan being quite heavily tweaked, or even like 6 of those 12 things, or, you know, 8 of those 12 things not done, as long as you get, you know, find the easiest way of hitting that goal. That's why, like, that's why we started So yeah, this is
and that's the thing, right? Like, no, like, and this is sort of part of the weird biases that, you know, come from sort of childhood and school and all the rest of it, is like, you know, we reward hard work, you know, sorry, we praise hard work, you know, there's a glorification of getting lots of things done on your checklist and like being really busy and what have you and all that sort of stuff. But it's actually like that's not what it's about. Like, it's not about running a million miles an hour on your original plan. If anything, that's probably potentially even a sign that you may be at risk of not putting the biggest dent in, you know. So I think being really focused, and the best way to do it, yeah, is like zoom out. And the shortcut for that is actually just getting a second opinion from someone you trust internally, even if they're not more senior, and really get them to criticize it, right? So it's like, hey, I'm trying to improve employee experience by 20%. You know, I'm a month of the way through. Like, I got this survey data back. I'm kind of doing this and doing that. I'm, you know, like feeling a little bit overwhelmed with this thing. Like, just help me out here. You know, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And then just even just bouncing that off someone, you know, internally, or someone who's a bit more removed from it, you know, will help spot the zoomed out view. Any tips here on this point, Tanmay? Because I think this is probably a good place to close, because you spend a lot of your day, you know, supporting teams, supporting people, you know, on this, you know, where they kind of feel overwhelmed with everything that's going on, feel overwhelmed with their plan, and you're kind of just like, okay, like, you know, you help them see this must, should, could, do, won't, yes, like really well.
Yeah, so I've used a few techniques here. Obviously, like, you know, Moscow, that must, should, could's the absolute sort of gold standard here, but there's some ways of visualizing this in a way that reduces overwhelm. So one way of thinking about it is like fast forward to the end, like to 90 days, and then work backwards from there. Okay, what needs to happen? Like, we need to have shown that we've made a 10% improvement. Okay, well, how would we show that? All right, well, there's this report that needs to be improved or whatever, right? Or we ask X customers and they tell us that, whatever. Okay, great, you do that. So that, what does that mean? Like, you probably need to have like a version of that at the start, right? Where you measure it at some point, to make sure that that's the base. Then, okay, what else needs to happen? Well, we need to ship something, right? Otherwise, how will we have the improvement? Okay, great. So just 2 weeks before that or 3 weeks before that, let's lock in that tentative thing. So you're working backwards and you're kind of going, you know, in order to get the end outcome, what needs to happen? And then what needs to be enabling that and what needs to be enabling that? So by the time you do that, you kind of come up with a bit of a step-by-step plan. And then you can work forwards from where you are today to sort of play it back and see, does it make sense? And then weed out any things that are kind of too wishy-washy or like,
yeah, that's, you know, so good. Yeah, I see you do that so often, because it's like, I think what quite often happens is like you're at a certain point, like to kind of, you know, use a mountain climbing analogy or what have you, like you know the top of the mountain and you can see that red flag at the top. You know you're trying to get there. You know you're like a quarter of the way, but then there's all this fog in between. And so then you kind of just go, but then people are like, oh, I've got to like pack my backpack, I've got to do this, da, da, da. And people like have also a bias for just like doing something quickly, right? And, you know, they're feeling like, oh, I've got to go, like, and so then, oh, I just pack up all my stuff and, oh, I probably need an extra thing. And then they do a bunch of busy stuff. And then it's like, okay, well, to your point, what you do is you go, okay, well, let's pretend we're at that red flag, you know, and it's in 40 days time. Okay, how do we get there? Okay, well, we had to get to that milestone, like, oh, that base camp 3.
Yeah,
okay,
the first,
like,
base camp.
How did we get there? Okay, we got that. And then, okay, well, how would we have gotten to the like previous one? So you're actually like playing the thing in reverse, which then gets you to your current point, which then helps you figure out your next step. And that then helps you throw things out of the boat.
Yes.
As opposed to, here's all the things that I could possibly do and I'm so overwhelmed. How do I get to the last, you know, to that big fuzzy goal with all this fog in front of me, right? Because I think it's that fog and that big goal that becomes the thing that gets the overwhelm kicking in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other sort of trip up that I've seen here is like, which leads to overwhelm, is just going too deep on just one of the first base camps and going, oh, like, let's figure out all the things just to get to the first base camp. But to be honest, like, if that takes you out of 30 days, like 25 days, then you're never going to make it.
First base camp, you got streaming fucking Netflix going on, like, you know, you got hot chocolates, like, it's all good. We're all at base camp and there's like 10 days left to the end of the quarter. And it's like, you didn't get to the flag. And like, oh, I was so busy setting up base camp one.
Yeah. So it's like, it's how do you kind of like just add a little bit more sort of fidelity to the plan step by step. So first you just go, all right, well, you know, the only plan is to get to Basecamp 1 by this date, Basecamp 2 by this date, and Basecamp 3 by this date. That's it. Then you look under the hood on like, okay, well, how do we get to Basecamp 1? Right. So you keep sort of zooming in and adding more and more color to it, but your higher level milestones are about, right, to be able to make it. So yeah, so I think what I would describe it as two-directional sort of zooming out and in, but also like zooming forward and back in time to be able to work out whether this fits or not. And this doesn't have to take a lot of time. You can actually quickly do this in a, you know, in a bit of a, with a scrap pad or with, you know, someone else you trust that can give you that external perspective. And yeah, be able to play it back and make sure it works.
How do you take all this away, Maddie? What's your perspective on this chat?
Oh, it's all been so many nuggets of gold, and it's been really helpful using this approach this time around for quarterly planning. I think for someone who's like relatively new to this process, my biggest sort of like the things we've discussed as trip ups and, you know, and how to avoid those is really that kind of like 80-20 rule and like the leanest possible plan, like come up with the simplest plan. And it's actually a good one for the efficiency over, effectiveness over efficiency, because it might not look like you're actually doing that much work, but if it hits the outcome, like it's worth keeping it a lean plan rather than overcooking the chook. And then I think the importance of getting, so that'd be takeaway number one. Number two is like the importance of really getting to the root causes and like really spending a lot of time in the problem phase, which I think we often talk about this is like, you know, 90% of the work is like defining the problem and figuring out what really the problem is that you're solving to actually move the needle. That's definitely been a good learning. And then thirdly and finally would be that zooming out, feeling comfortable to change scope, like always zooming out, but zooming in at the right fidelity and whatever it might be, to make sure that you're going to achieve it and not getting too caught up in the original plan that you set 90 days ago, if it means that, you're not actually going to eventually hit the outcome. So, yeah, it's been a great episode. Thanks so much for sharing all of your wisdom, Tamay.
And I'll add one more thing because I had those exact takeaways as well. One thing that sort of stood out here for me as well, and Ray Dalio talks about this, is like every great plan should feel like a movie script, meaning that, it's sort of like there's this clear sequential, like this then happens, then this then happens, you know, then this then happens. And, you know, I think one of the things that I quite like, Tanmay, is, you know, that thing that you're going to do right now, is it a logical straight line to then get to the next step? You know, it should look like a connect the dots to the top of the mountain. And so I think one of the things that sometimes when you kind of go, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, sometimes they can feel good in isolation, or they could be, you know, good thematically, or, you know, maybe it's the new craze to, you know, get some fancy, you know, heat map analytics, you know, on a website. But you go, okay, well, you got that heat map analytics on a website. Can I draw a straight line to that fancy new thing that you're doing? Like, that's going to get us to like that thing. And it's like, oh no, like I'm still like collecting the data. And it's like, okay, well, if we do that, like here's the amount of time that you got left. I just think this is like logical sort of backwards thinking of like each dot, and can you draw a straight logical line? It almost should just like stack up to some basic, you know, intellectual scrutiny. And so I think there's some things that get tripped up just by that alone. And I think that's one of the things that you do, you know, a great job of, Tanmay. And then obviously the working backwards from the flag through the fog to now. Any parting words of wisdom? Great to have you on the potty officially, sharing all your battle scars and wisdom here. Any final closing thoughts?
No, good. I think I'll just probably finish with what's it called? Plan the work and work the plan. So yeah, the plan is just the start. It's not the whole thing. So yeah, it's ultimately about pushing through and getting the results. So yeah, good luck with all your plans.
Love that. Thanks very much for hosting this one, Maddie. Great to have you on the show, Tanmay. Till next time.
Thanks, Tanmay. Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Hey there. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Startup Jobs. This episode was made in collaboration with our friends at Early Work Academy, Australia's only tech sales bootcamp with a job guarantee. Applications are currently open for the next cohort. and all of the details are in the show notes. And finally, if something resonated with you in today's episode, we're posting episodes like this every week, including CEO memos straight from Michael. The best way to get these episodes on the day is by hitting the follow button on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We'll see you next time.